Now, there's a 10-1 rider on a new reel I'm setting up for Mark this Saturday night, the 9th of October, 71, to report on this huge day. That walk before breakfast and putting up a fence and the Audubon field trip and visit at lunch, 2 hours talk with Marion Hodge and Suzanne. He bought fence posts from John Palmer, and now he's riding with Faye on Hubert H. Humphrey, following his sister's footsteps. This Channel 1 right on a new reel this Saturday night. I'm setting it up before I have supper, the 9th of October, 71.
Yes, because I'd always slouched over and had not been putting my body forward. I'd usually ridden like this, usually the way I sit, you know. When you do stretch up and lean forward, it helps. But what I don't understand still is how to ride at the trot without just boom, 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 bouncing up and down.
Well, that's, you have to post.
And get that down, that posting technique.
You just saddle up your bend, practice on anytime you think about it.
Can you post?
No, I can't.
And when you're not riding a Hubert, you can practice on driving a tractor.
I'll post on the tractor.
What was that? What did you say, Faye? I couldn't hear the noise there. You learned what? The ride Hubert?
What were the things you learned?
Oh, three things, big things. First of all, I learned how to ride the tractor. Then I learned how you approach people around here in order to get them to open up. And then I learned the final thing was some techniques in riding, and such as posting, though I still don't know how to post, how to stand up in the saddle in order to avoid being bounced up every time.
Yeah. Well, that's a good bet. That's a busy day, isn't it?
I'd say that is. I'd say that's 100% more than I would learn if I were on the beach with Mother and Dad now. I don't think I learned anything.
Well, you don't particularly need to rest.
I don't. That's very true. In fact, I have a good mind. But I'd like to get I'll probably get a job as a janitor. That'll get me mopping floors. Mopping floors is hard work. I learned that in a restaurant. And I may be doing that in some of the university buildings, some janitor work shortly. So that'll give me some exercise. Also, I have a good mind to, and it takes a little money, maybe I'll get it through my work, to do some backpacking, maybe some hitchhiking. Though my mother and dad don't like me to get out and just wander aimlessly. And yet there's something about putting your pack on your back and just going where you wish, where you think you'll find people that you can relate to. But the trouble is, you need to settle down to relate to people, so I see there's a problem there.
Well, now, you see, I used to have a pack all the time.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know how to do it now.
You haven't had it on your back in a long time, I guess.
Well, we didn't have the big highways.
Well, now it's against the law to thumb on the big highways, I understand. Some states are super highways. It's against the law to thumb. But, of course, that isn't really hiking either if you're going to thumb the way across the country.
Oh, you weren't caught.
But I would like to hike some, do some backpacking as I did in the Tennessee Mountains. I used to do that when I was in
I understood to say hitchhiking.
That too. Just traveling around, sleeping on the ground, and getting by with a little bit of food. Feeling warm, feeling hot, feeling cold, feeling freezing. That'll get you body a little more in tune than if I were to go to the beach. But you know, the beach is pretty good for running. Some people use the coast. They run up and down several miles. I got a brother who does that.
Oh, really?
And that's healthy, you know. running up and down the beach, jogging for several miles, and you've certainly got a straight stretch there and no obstacles.
No.
Mark?
Yeah.
Seems to me you left out one of the important things today. Didn't you do some fencing?
Fencing, yes. Definitely fencing. But I got a taste of that yesterday. So.
Oh, you count that on.
So it wasn't completely novel.
Put in it, we're going on fine.
Just the introduction, I guess, yesterday. And today I got on my own a little bit more fencing, I guess. So I learned a lot here. Sometimes I don't appreciate what I learn unless I do enumerate it. Unless I do list it out, we'll look at it and say, "Now, here's a category, here's a list of things I learned."
I won't see we never get back to this, and I don't have access to this information.
That's right.
I don't know how you get out.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know, Faye.
I don't either. Backpack over there.
Oh, yes, I've got backpacks at home that I used on a recent trip out west that I could use.
Does that take all you need?
The backpacks? Does it take all my need?
All you need?
Just about. I think I would be very happy. Oh, yes, in terms of material goods. Yes, the kit, mess kit. I need a little bigger bag than I have. And you know, if you see some of the packs that are used, pack and frames too, that are used by kids and today, but people of all ages, it's a new thing that's come on the market. You may have seen them, and these are the huge pack frames that come from above your head to your below your hips, and they're contoured to fit your back, the curve of your back,
mm-hmm.
And the bag will often extend that whole length, an enormous bag. And they can get sometimes a month's supply of stuff right back there. And you know, the food is, well, it's like the Army, I guess, had especially prepared food, often dry food. And so they can get steaks that are even dehydrated and very lightweight. Of course, it's lightweight, all of this should be. And they can get a couple weeks to maybe a month's supply. They'd have to replenish their food after a couple of weeks, I think, just a little. But in terms of material goods, hold an awful lot. And comfortably, too. Not like it's not just a knapsack that's against your back. There's air that can get in the car because you've got a frame on it.
But I see. I didn't know a thing about that. Not a thing.
You're probably used to the rucksacks and the knapsacks.
No, I'm not used to any of it. See, I've done it years.
Yeah, you haven't.
I haven't talked to anybody that has.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't use one of those. You don't need that much supply.
Yes, one of the bigger ones. They cost around $40, $50 for a very good one. $40 for a medium, mediocre one. But that would, backpacking for this equipment, so you can put your sleeping bag on that frame too.
Oh.
So you can put your tent on that frame. For many people just use a ground cloth as a cover in case of rain. But in terms of material goods, you can get an awful lot. Now, it also satisfies, I thought maybe you were referring to maybe another need, too. For me, it would set up a lot of young people. it satisfies a desire just to move, just to travel. And travel did me good in my mind when I went out to California. I don't know, I didn't anticipate that at all.
Oh, really?
But you know this with your travels. I'm sure that somehow it's, you clear your mind out by virtue of encountering things on the road. You learn things about yourself, and I just didn't know travel could help.
It refreshes.
I didn't know that either.
Well, I tell you, I had sort of grown just weary of the idea of travel, of getting in the car and sitting solid, you see, and going several odd miles and back.
If you got what's good place here, I wouldn't travel much. You get all the exercise you need, I guess, you know, in the field.
No, I'd need it and get out at all.
Yeah. As I said, I believe a week
and
ago, I can't see that it'd do you any good to get out and get away from this place.
And you have that equipment.
A little smaller. My frame is not the best frame. It's a small frame, and I don't have a big bag to put all the stuff in. But so I might buy, and also my boots are coming apart.
Poor guy. He has to tie his own.
Really? Well, I wouldn't do much walk. Was traveling. I can understand why you tear them up out here. That you have to wear them all the time.
The weather disintegrates them.
Oh, you must be talking about leather boots now, because you wear some rubber boots now.
Yeah, the rubber.
And
rubber.
That's all right, that doesn't disintegrate.
Oh, yeah.
Does it, too?
I was wearing leather.
I didn't realize it, the weather.
You take one of pair of these boots up the country, I'd wear them 3 or 4 years. It seemed like it never wear out.
But they wear out here.
Well, of course, I wear them more here. I never get out of the house without them.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't last quite as long.
Yeah. You must like those rubber boots better than maybe leather ones. I guess
well, you see, I can wear my ordinary shoes.
Oh, I see.
And you know, there's a lot of dampness around. And
yeah.
The grass is wet, and your leather boots are pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's right.
But not many people down here wear rubber like these, full bubble boots.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I haven't seen many people wear rubber boots.
They don't even stock them.
Yep, I wouldn't be surprised.
I get them to see us, and see us has to order from Atlanta.
Sears doesn't even have them in stock. That's pretty bad.
Sears doesn't have much in stock anyhow. I don't even know where you'd walk. You'd hike. You wouldn't thumb your way.
Well, no problem. I just don't like walking along roads. You know, walking on flat land all the time, hiking on flat land. I don't see that Florida presents many opportunities for just hiking. For a weekend, for just hiking. Particularly if you think that hiking involves going up and down to some extent, because it seems to me it's just two-dimensional here. So I love the mountains, I think, and I wouldn't want to reside in Florida, make a permanent home out of this place because of the flat.
You mean you'd take a bus to the mountains and then start hiking?
Now that's lots of expense. I think that's what I do now. Or if I got a cheap car, cheap on gas, little Datsun, so that'll help me to get to the mountain.
And then yeah.
And you know the northern Georgia. I got a brother up there. His name is Herman Jr. He's in Somerville, and he lives in those mountains in the southern part of the Appalachian Range. And that's a very pretty mountainous area, northern Georgia.
If you just take a bus up to him, all right?
I believe I'll take that little Datsun that's cheap on gas up there, and I'll get some backpacking in that way.
And then make your headquarters there with Herman Jr.
If I could find a job there, or Knoxville, Tennessee, or in western North Carolina, I think that would be ideal. But you're familiar with the mountains. You told me that you backpacked.
Yeah.
So you know what it's like. I'm surprised you can be at ease here.
Well.
As much as you are without the mountains.
We find that it's a little... it's nice to be able to get out.
Yeah.
Just take what you got. I guess that's about it.
Don't you miss the snow? Seems like you miss the snow. Maybe not if you live here long enough.
Well, I think we just get anemic and don't realize it. Breakfast.
Well, no, I think I got my breakfast. I don't think I would dare to start before breakfast.
Yeah.
I got a 7 o'clock breakfast. Birding, that's what I did today. I got with some people who went into birding. But I've done that before, but still, it was good to. I haven't been with a group in a long time. And one thing I don't know how to do is how to enjoy the outdoors and at the same time socialize. I don't know how to do it. Hiking clubs are like that. I was in a hiking club, Smoky Mountain Hiking Club, when I was in Knoxville. And they belonged to the Appalachian Trail Conference. It was a well-organized club. And I thought I'd just go out with them. So I went out with them for several months. And I never did enjoy the outdoors because I was always worried about, am I getting across to the fellow next to me? Are we communicating as we should? Are we... Have I already asked him how he did, what he was doing yesterday, how his work went at the office? Have I asked him that? If I haven't, maybe I bought a doing it. I'd be worried about that. And I'd missed the snake. On board, a beautiful snake. And so I just don't know how to combine socializing and an enjoyment of the outdoors. And maybe it shouldn't be combined, but that's hard to believe. Some way you can combine them, and some of these people you can combine them, do it very well.
I don't know that I ever went on, what do you call it, trip, a nature trip, what was it?
The Smoky Mountains.
Yeah, hiking clubs.
Hiking club.
Mm.
I don't know that I ever did that.
We used to hike with friends, but it was friends who had the same...
Yeah, you didn't have to worry about
it. You didn't have to,
etiquette.
I don't think you can see much either. Mm-hmm. I think you're... If you're going up with a car or something like that, see, with a bunch of people like that, it's mostly just peddling up there, you see.
Mm-hmm. But maybe if it's with just a few people that you love, maybe with a wife or a girlfriend or some close friend, then you don't feel the need to keep up with the formalities. Politeness would be a natural thing.
Yeah, I guess that's fine.
You know, that brings up a whole world that I have abandoned. We used to live in that world, Radio Limerick.
Yes.
Science. No, I wouldn't know.
Faye,
mm-hmm.
This is so much.
You don't...
I can't
yeah,
possibly...
Okay.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Eat your salad.
Oh, yes.
Be out tonight.
I'm going to keep my ears open.
But I didn't hear him this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Maybe I wasn't listening.
That's when you often hear him?
Yeah. That's when he is. That's his time.
You set your clocks back.
Oh, we aren't in there. Across the east one. In that woods.
Right.
Well, if he's out there, he's going to be heard tonight by at least one person. I'm not going to get any sleep. I'm going to keep my ears open.
Well, now, you see, on this side of the house, we can't hear him. We used to sleep upstairs here, and we could hear everything.
Oh.
Now they're changed down here. We can't hear anything except Miss Bessie's dogs. Street noises. Far better on this side. Yeah, you are.
Mm-hmm.
Far better. We live in that trailer for a long time after we came out here. And it's far nicer to live in than this house.
For sound.
Yeah. And being conscious of the outdoors.
You have it under a shed, don't you? Why do you have it? Was the shed already here, or
no,
do you think it'll protect the roof better?
Well, what it protects is keep sun off. The sun would shine on it about 5 minutes, and you couldn't stand to be inside.
You're right, because I can understand now why you did that, because I lived in a trailer for a couple of years, and we didn't have that shelter.
Yeah.
And when that summer, it was very, very hot.
I put those locust trees up. I thought they would do it, but it wouldn't.
I wondered.
Even as big as they are now, they still wouldn't do it. If the sun comes through and just heats the roof, it won't. You can't get that hot air out.
Mm-mm.
You could put in air conditioning, but you see, I don't want air conditioning out here.
Yeah. Well, that's what eventually had to be done in the little trailer I was living in the last several months.
Yeah.
Had to find an air conditioner small enough and work on the windows to find them.
Yeah.
And that wasn't too effective, right? You have an oil furnace out there in the trailer?
Yes, sir. And
how does it work?
One of the finest.
It really
very helps. Good.
You put it on as low as it'll go, and it'll just be perfect light.
And it's probably pretty old, too.
Yeah.
Old as that trailer, maybe.
Yeah.
Very good.
I've tried to get some more like it. They don't, of course, they don't make them anymore.
Too bad.
That goes back to the mid-50s.
Oh. And it's rather comfortable heat, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
That's what I thought.
And it has a little fan, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as I recall, the little one I was used to had a fan.
Yeah,
and I tried to put a space heater in time of trailer, and that was very uncomfortable. That just heats up very intensely the space in front of it, and all the rest is cool. But that oil heater is just, I can breathe easily, and there's no problem with humidity.
Yeah. And you can leave the door open.
I haven't tried that.
Never, we would never close the door.
Oh, really?
In the winter time.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how well those trailers are heated. Thank you. Well, I thought about possibly, I don't think I'll be able to afford a house anytime before I'm 50, but because I'm not going to be getting a respectable job anytime before I am. But I will, maybe I can afford some old acres, some wooded land, some maybe overgrown land. Maybe there'll be some cheap acreage left available somewhere in this country. And what I thought I'd do is put a trailer, just one of these old trailers on it like this. But then, I've heard from some people that there's some problems with just putting a trailer anywhere. That a lot of places have laws regarding the location of trailers. And so I think there'll be a problem with that. And in Chapel Hill, if the trailers are put on any land now that's not a mobile park, then, well, they can't. That's illegal.
All right.
disappointing.
I didn't know about that.
Unless they're before a certain date. If they were on the land before, but the law was put on the books, then it was okay before 1950 or 40.
Now, you anticipate getting some land?
I would very much like to, before I'm 40 years old, buy some land. Some wooded land or some old pastures.
And then you'd have plenty of room for your own trailer.
Right.
And no one, your neighbors, to listen to that stereo.
Yeah.
You might
have to do a little. A lot of kids are just building their cabins. The lots that they buy.
Well, if you have a trailer, you don't have to leave it in the same place. If you want to change, you can.
Right.
I think Faye was telling me somebody. Maybe you told me. You had looked around pretty considerably for various kinds of jobs.
That's what I'm doing now, and I think next week I'm gonna get a job as a janitor. There's someone I'm gonna see who will have some jobs for me for campus as janitors. And I haven't really looked a whole lot before I came here. In the morning I looked a great deal, yesterday morning. And I'll find me a job just for a little while. And I'm not sure whether I'm going to be teaching in September or not. A lot of things are happening in my mind now. Which make me question my effectiveness as a teacher. But then a lot of things I encountered on my trip out west led me to think that an awful lot of people who need a teacher and need a teacher who is, I don't have any specific skills, but I'm not as smart as most of the kids I come across. But I do have convinced of something that most awful lot of people I've met are not convinced of, and that is the value of gentleness and the value of what you all are up to. Sometimes it's called empathy. Trying to get into another person's world. Listening empathetically, or trying to listen to a person, understand them by imagining yourself in their shoes. Those two things. If you have that, it seems to me you'll have a more open mind. And now that's hard to find in a philosophy professor. The gentleness and empathy.
Oh, really?
Seldom will you find gentleness and absorption into another person's world, an attempt to try to understand. So I'll have a difficult time at it. And one of the specific things I'm going to have to let go is the grading system. Because I don't see how I can approach philosophy. I don't know how you go about helping get people. I don't know how you go about getting people. Really suggesting ways of interpreting philosophers. I don't see how that can be graded. Getting people to think about their own lives and what is best for them in the future. I just don't see how that can be graded with A, B, C, D, and F. And since I just can't justify the grading system, I'm going to have a hard time as a teacher, am I not?
I don't quite follow what
I just don't. Are you at ease giving A, B, C, D's, and F's? Do you know how to do that to people? Can you objectively grade people in the classroom? I don't see how I could in philosophy.
Yes, I can pretty well.
That's remarkable. I just don't see how I could.
But I don't do it in a logical way. On your see, I don't know philosophy people. They don't seem to take to me.
They don't take to me either. In fact, I just barely got through. I'm surprised I got all the way through college. I was a strange critter.
But I would think they would be gentler and more gentle than the other people.
Oh, you know philosophy people. They're logicians.
Yes.
They know the proper logic.
Yes.
Oh.
And if you don't talk logically, make the correct inferences, they're going to argue with you. Impactly, the entire way they discuss things is what via argument, by way of argument, by way of criticizing a person logically.
Pure mind.
Pure mind. Unless you get into some philosophies like maybe, it's a rare philosopher who'll recognize Emerson as a philosopher.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's a rare philosopher who'll recognize Whitehead as a philosopher. Because Whitehead talked about experience, talked about his life.
Yeah.
It's a rare philosopher who will consider Camus and Sartre and Dostoevsky as philosophical.
Oh, really?
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Not many philosophers. If more philosophers did that, then I think you could get along with them.
They don't feel comfortable with the experience.
Not at all. Not at all. See, I got my college training, all my graduate training, in a school which was completely concerned with the proper use of language, called language analysis.
Isn't it?
And I think that's a pretty narrow way of approaching philosophy.
And you took it hook, line, and sinker.
I didn't take it. That's why I'm surprised I got by. Some of the courses are required, of course, so you have to go through some of the stuff that's uniform for everybody. So I had to go through some of that, but when I could get out in that third year as quick as I could, get all my classes behind me, fortunately I was able to find one or two teachers who said, well, now listen, I like some of the things you like in the way of a philosophical style. I like to consider philosophy a product of my experience as almost autobiographical, but don't let others know that I'm telling you this.
Oh, really?
So. We're going to philosophize. I'm going to help you in your dissertation. I'm going to help you get out of here. But we're going to do it under covers. We're going to do it. You got me as a friend, and you have this person across the hall, and maybe you'll need one other person. Is there anyone else around here?
Oh.
And they think hard. Well, maybe this third person will go along with you. And so it was hard getting out of that. That was strange. Any humanist is going to have difficulty in a lot of departments of philosophy. Except this one. Florida has some good department of philosophy, and it has some humanists in there.
Really?
My particular mother and dad are not at all fond of a former chairman of that department, and I imagine you've heard of his name, Tom Hanna. But Tom Hanna now, he's the sort of person who philosophizes only insofar as it is relevant to his experience.
Yeah. How did he get away with it?
He doesn't. In fact, he's not German anymore. He's in South America. He's in South America studying with a guy called Ivan Ilyich. And this fella, Ilyich, is leading a movement. He's one of the foremost people who are pushing the idea that there should be no schools. That the distinction between school and community cannot be justified. That either the school is the community, it's the way you get along in the community, the skills you pick up, or there's no reason for being in a school or special place and time for classes. It should be absorbed in life completely, the school. So that's what he means by de-schooling, and Tom Hanna's with this person. And that's kind of the natural way to go. It seems. If you're very experiential minded, but I have some serious questions about that. Because somehow the classroom does bring people with different backgrounds together, and if you're just going to make the school the particular community you live in, if this was my school right here, and I didn't get out with the insurance man, with the administrator, then I think that would be too narrow a world. So I'm not tremendously fond of these people who say, no schools.
Yeah.
All the schooling you need is the particular skills it takes to get by on your farm or on your crafts.
Yeah.
I think there's some questions about that. These are some of the things I have been going through my head. Help me to decide it.
There ought to be such a thing as a mental life, you know, and that doesn't come from experience.
Well, I wonder. Yeah. Maybe not.
I mean, experience would be inadequate to give it to
mm-hmm.
unless you count Emerson and Camus as a part of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be stretching it, wouldn't it? Let me tell you, your jobs you were talking about, now, how do you canvas for them? I know how I used to. I don't know how you do it.
I park my bicycle on one end of a block, or my car, whatever I'm using, usually a bicycle. Get off my bicycle and walk to one business after the other. Walk to a restaurant and say, you got any jobs, any work that's available? And they say usually no. Very tight situation in university town, all the students, great competition. Go to a motel, it's the next door. Say, you got a janitor position, a clerk position for open? You know, say yes or no, or fill out an application form and come back later, we might have something. And there's sometimes there are, you know, offices which you go to, such as for the university, central office, handles all the non-academic jobs. And that's where I might get a job next week.
Well,
how did you do it? Was it any different?
That's where I did it. And
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, every now and then I get one. I remember I worked one summer at Flying Fame, a little restaurant there, just off Columbia, you see, on Broadway, I guess. I remember in New Orleans, I had this job at the pawn shop. It wasn't that by name. I don't know what it was by name, but chiefly what they took in was what, you know, hot stuff. But I wasn't particularly good at getting jobs. I walked in, they looked me over. I remember I for a while I canvassed the waterfront.
Yeah.
And I remember one Swedish boat I went in. And they took me downstairs, down below decks, to where the captain or somebody was.
Yeah.
And he was sitting at his table in his cabin with a toddy, and he had me sit down and poured me one and talked to me a minute. And he could tell right off, you see, that I wasn't tough enough for his bunch. So he talked to me a few minutes.
That's too bad. I bet you were tough enough for
No, no. No, I didn't have the touch.
Yeah.
No.
What were you doing before you went there? Were you in school?
Yes.
And he looked like he was about 12 years old, you know.
Yeah.
Now he wouldn't let you be a deckhand.
No. Well, they know. They can tell. Good Lord. You go down to Sears and ask for a job, you know, a salesman. What is that damn thing running for, Fee?
I don't know that. Why would it be it's running? You better go cut it off. It's running constantly.
I think that's too bad, because you might have done well on that ship if they'd given you a chance.
Yeah.
And I think they ought to. There's too much prejudging the people. You assume that you won't fit in because you haven't done this sort of thing in the past, or you don't look the shape, or you're not dressed up, or you're not in rough enough clothes. But
right.
You could learn how to live with them, maybe.
Yeah, I've been a lot of places that they didn't like my look.
Well, I've been a lot of those places too. In fact, I didn't get a job in Chapel Hill for several months because they didn't like my look.
Funny like that. Yeah, this Rick that was here, we talked about. He's 23, and he looks like he's about 10.
Oh.
He is the youngest looking thing I ever saw. He just has a baby face.
Hmm.
He can't convince people that he's over.
Really?
15.
Oh.
He's a blonde. You know. He says he if he lets it in his hair, it comes right along here.
Yeah.
He said if he lets it come down any longer, it looks like he's about 4 years old. He can't grow a beard because
yeah.
He hadn't got any. So. He pulls his hair down here and keeps his hair cut. It's just nothing he can do.
That's too bad.
Except to look like he, I don't know when he will look like he's grown.
He's
a handsome boy.
That's too bad.
Yeah, well.
Is he in school now?
He graduated. He got his, at least he got his undergraduate.
Yeah, I know how now. I could do it. But I know how then.
I think you do.
Yeah, I couldn't make contact.
But you've got ways of know how to relate, I think. Become absorbed in another person's world. It'll help you.
Well,
I'm not suggesting that you need to find work. But I'm suggesting that maybe if I keep expose myself to some of your ways of relating to people, make things easier for me.
Well, I don't have a good way. But... I have worked with him, associated with him, and all, and I'll tell you, when I came out here, I came out here thinking that I'd have a little trailer out here, and that's a family living in this house. Well, I had several experiences, all of them sad. They, and I'd get a hold of somebody, and I want someone who'd take care of the place.
Mm-hmm.
I could do a little on it, but I figured I could find somebody who'd take care of the place, and they could, you see, make something out of it. And I'd like them, but the first thing I knew, they'd walk off and leave it. I didn't know what it was. And the first toehold I got was through the horses.
Hmm.
That way back now, the cattle, I never did get no rest through the cattle. This boy over here, Sim's boy, he's sort of a drifter, and he just loved horses. And he came over here himself. I knew his pappy and his mammy, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Pappy's a plumber, his mama I knew at the Sunday school. And they used to borrow my tractor, and I used to go over there and mow for them, things like that. So Johnny came over here. He was short of money. And he offered, I don't remember just the circumstances of it, but he took over Noopy to ride and break her in and teach her a little something, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he worked with Faye. And Faye could see right off that it had to be very particular. She couldn't say, all right, now, Johnny, I guess I'll be ready by 10 o'clock in the morning. You can say what it is, Faye. You can say it better than I can.
Hmm.
I never made a date with him for the following day. And I never paid him, except when he had ridden her that day, at the end of the day. I paid him. And it was always just up to him when he came back. Because I saw right away that he couldn't, this wasn't going to make schedule.
He wasn't going to make schedule.
Mm-mm.
Well, that's, without going into the whole story, that went on all summer, and we learned a good bit from him, or Faye did, but she didn't know she was learning it. It's just something that eventually, you know, she got a little inkling as she went along, but it was very, very little. And tell you the truth, the first real progress I made was through the tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have a fellow who'd come out here, work with us, and he'd come in here and sit and talk a lot. Well, I had the tape recorder sitting right here, you see, and he wasn't conscious of it. He didn't care anything about the tape recorder. And I'd turn it on. And then when he left, I'd listen to it. And you won't believe this unless you have experience. You can hear a great deal more from the tape than you can from the conversation. And then you can look at it. Just keep looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time. First time I ever made any headway at all. Everything I did, and I could enumerate now, almost everything I did, turned them against me. They'd be polite, they just wouldn't come back.
The thing about it, it seems to me.
Well, I didn't know the tape machine could help get you to know how to be friends with people.
Well,
that's
interesting. The big thing.
Very interesting.
Because you see, you'll look at them not from your point of view, but you'll begin to see them from their point of view.
That's right.
See, I never held it against Johnny that he wouldn't be pinned down on a date, because that was Johnny.
We taped Johnny. Yes.
And he did it.
We didn't tape him much. We taped him a little bit. Just enough.
But the big pride, the thing that he could hold his head up about, and he'd been treated all sorts of ways. And
yeah,
he'd
been treated rough.
But there's one thing that he could do. He could ride a horse.
Yeah.
And that was his, and I never questioned it.
Yeah.
I always held it up.
Yeah.
And through the tape, we could see that this was Johnny's, he was something on a horse.
Yes, on the horse.
It was beautiful.
He was something.
Yeah.
Yes, he was above all of his disabilities.
And we never would have seen it if we hadn't have been able to think of it afterwards and see it from his report.
That's right.
And his parents to this day say that we're the only people around here that Johnny ever enjoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we found out if it's true about Johnny.
I wouldn't catch him. But that was, it was hard won. Hard.
No war.
I understood you, Faye.
Yeah.
No, it's, I found it a very difficult thing. Very difficult thing. People talk about, you know, looking in the other point of view. I find it very difficult. They talk about it as if it's just a matter of talking to somebody and looking at their point of view. Well, they don't see anything. That's the only thing. They don't have the terms in which to see.
So you had to take the step. You couldn't expect Johnny, was that his name? You couldn't expect Johnny to say, well, now, Mrs. Miles would like me to tell her where I'm going to be tomorrow, if I'm going to be here. Now, you had to take the step and realize what he was like.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Because he just didn't. He couldn't enter into your world, but you could after
right.
a while, just see what he's like and say, well, now he's a guy who hasn't learned, he hasn't scheduled his life. It's probably a good thing that he hasn't. So I say.
Well, you know, you don't go ever, you don't go direct into the final mysteries. I've spent days and days and days looking at wildlife over a period of years. Well, there may not be a connection, but but at least I looked. And I found out with birds, if I see one there, I hear one there, and I say, well, that's a common tit. Well, unless I see it, I can't say it's a common tit. The margin of error is so great. You all going down, Miss Bessie's?
Well, we are. Let's see. Well, I would step down there and see if she's all right, and then I wouldn't be surprised if after a big day we're good and collapse.
Yeah. I think tomorrow morning I'd like to work with you and clean up the horses if you would like to.
Well,
whatever you have in mind for work, you say or go.
We'll
see what happens. Okay.
There'll be plenty of things to do. Didn't y'all get some wire today? Yes.
Yeah. No, we got wire. There might be something. No, we didn't get wire. That's right.
That's
we studied the wires, different sorts of wire.
Too costly.
Yeah.
We
would have had to spend $80, I think. There was one roll there, it was sold for $30 to $40. I assume it was a $40 roll.
And it'd taken a couple of them to get out.
Take two
of
them.
My goodness.
And now what we could have done was buy a roll of barbed wire, and just we have to buy three of those though, because that would just be a single strand. That would have been cheaper, but. You think he had a good point about cows can really hurt themselves? I didn't think that you really swallowed that. If you didn't think that was that
horses
much.
Horses run into it, and they'll cut themselves up.
Yeah.
Cows can hurt themselves, but they don't generally.
Yeah, I didn't think that you considered that to be good.
Well, I'll tell you what, let me put on my jeans and Mark and I'll walk down the road a minute and then we'll
call. And I'll go out and try to see what's wrong with the damn water. That's right. Hey, you better help me with that water.
Now, this is over towards the end of Channel 1 Right, and the end of the visit was Mark at supper Saturday the 9th of October, 71, this huge day. Oh, it was so full. Channel 1 Right, and the end of the visit with Mark, over around 900, at supper, after supper, this 9th of October, 71.